And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez, and you are...
Christian, again.
Yes.
Burger.
And special guest, and we got a full show. We got some peer-to-peer programming.
We got some .NET 4.
We got some Azure stuff.
And we got some...
A virtual hard drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now talk us through this picture. Is this, are you performing live? What's going on here?
That's last year when we had like a Microsoft student partner meeting in Seattle.
Okay.
And Microsoft organized a nice little party for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Rock Band, and we were playing in a bowling alley. And what they did is like they had a big projector in the alley.
Oh,
yeah. They projected the Rock Band to the, you know, to the wall.
Oh, nice.
And we were like playing and singing and...
You know, was it a competition or?
No, just for fun.
Oh, okay.
It was really cool.
All right.
A lot of fun there.
Yeah. Now, so big story is that SQL Azure, you're...
It's feature complete for CTP.
This is your home team,
oh,
right?
Oh, for PDC, actually, sorry.
Yeah.
So we are actually feature complete. Yeah, it's awesome. And we got a lot of speed improvements and a new portal. So if you sign in, you're getting a new portal with new colors and... Everything is nice there.
I'm sure it's the colors that really were the harder part.
I was like there and like, it used to be different. What is
it?
Sure. And when you sign in the first time with this new version, you will get asked to create a new server. You can still use your old account,
mm-hmm.
but like you need to create a new server because like we moved everything.
Mm.
And then you once you create your server, you are able to start creating your databases, right?
Okay.
And there are two different kind of databases in there. Like one is 1 gigabyte for like small stuff if you don't need much.
Yeah, I noticed that it was called the web version.
Yeah, and then there's one that's like 10 gigabytes and you can decide on each database which one you want to use.
Okay.
So for most stuff, you probably only need the small one, right? If you have like some data to manage.
Mm-hmm.
If you have more data, you use the 10 gigabytes. And something that's really cool is that we have enabled bulk copying now. Which means, like, if you upload data to SQL Azure now, you will get a lot of speed improvement, a lot. Like,
okay.
My PC, actually, while I was testing this stuff and I uploaded data, I couldn't work anymore on it because it was so much, like, intense, like, getting the data from my box up there. It was so fast that, actually, my hard drive was, like, dying there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was really fast.
Now, are you using ADO.NET bulk copy, or using BCP, or...?
It's working with all of them, right? So
I
used like the ADO.NET SQL bulk copy command to upload the data.
Okay.
Then I used the command line tool. And there's even this, on Coplex, there's the SQL Azure migration wizard, which we covered like it was one of my pick of the weeks.
And that works with bulk copy?
Yeah, this guy now enabled it with bulk copy and has like a nice UI and everything.
Oh, that's awesome.
So what it does is like this wizard is going to like analyze your data, creates the database and the schema, everything in SQL Azure for the account you gave it.
Right.
And it will migrate the data with bulk copy.
That's awesome.
So it's like darn simple, right? You just click like...
And is this a community member that built it?
It's like someone at Microsoft, like in...
Okay, I was going to say...
But it's open source,
hired him,
right?
Is my question.
No, it's he was like building it on his free, like on the weekends and whatever, right?
Just you should for recruit
fun.
Him for... Because it looks awesome, man.
Yeah, and just like, it's like so easy, right? You just click, you select. It copies even stored procedures, functions, and whatever, right?
That stuff's just scripting out the database. But
yeah,
I'm
that's
sure
scripting
also,
database.
Whether it does like warnings if you did something that SQL Azure doesn't...
It will actually remove the stuff, you know. It says something like, oh, you have like on this index, you have something that is not compatible, so I'm going to remove it.
Right.
And it's going to create the index without it, but you get like a report on it, so you know exactly, okay, that's what actually got removed because it's not compatible, right? But most
Very
of stuff
cool.
is legacy stuff anyway, right? So it's not really important.
Yeah. Yeah, so tons of stuff there, and you can read the blog post for the full... feature brain dump.
So this one is interesting, right? That's like
Twitter
and PowerPoint.
Yeah, so this is SAP Web, I believe, is the folks that had done it. Now, this isn't a screenshot of PowerPoint. This is actually a tool, and it comes with a sample deck from Sarah Perez, where it actually shows you real-time conversations in a PowerPoint slide.
Okay.
So this is awesome.
So you could, like, say you present on the web, and you have on the side, you have, like, the Twitter that's coming in?
I'd love... Yeah, I mean,
like
we can imagine, like, the world where Channel 9 is live. We just do this, right? Where it's like, ooh, wow, there's... It turns out nobody likes me. Everybody likes a little guru. Screw you guys. I'm going home.
So imagine we had something like that in that current deck, and we were live, right? Well, that's what you're saying, right?
That's the future.
That's the future. It is indeed.
So very cool. Check that out.
So this is something that's really interesting too, right? I mean,
yeah. So this is a new tool by Cisternals and Mark Rusinovich built it. But what it does is it takes your regular I have my regular PC. I built everything that I wanted. I now want to convert that into a virtual hard drive.
Okay.
So it basically takes your regular PC hard drive, converts it into a VHD file. So that way, you know, if let's just say, for example, I'm building a standard developer platform, I want to start with my machine and then do XYZ. I do that, I now export it as VHD, and boom, I have a running machine.
That's awesome. So that's really,
I love this. I totally, totally love this.
And imagine that with Hyper-V.
You know, sometimes, yeah. And it works with both virtual PC and Hyper-V.
Yeah.
But, like, you know how you get the Cant repro? Like, no, I'm going to give you a virtual hard drive of my machine.
And use it, right? And
you are going to repro this, and you will close this.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, I'm very
excited. Do you know how hard it is? Like, is it just like 2 clicks and you're done?
Yeah, yeah. It's incredibly easy, actually.
That's nice.
Yeah. So. And speaking of virtual PC, now you've been using
XP mode for a while.
XP mode, yeah.
I use it for, like, testing some stuff, right? Legacy stuff, you know. And
what are you testing?
I'm testing some stuff in Internet Explorer 6.
Why would you be testing it in Internet Explorer 6? Huh?
For the fun.
And maybe, you're working on a little secret project. Maybe there's too many secrets.
On secret projects.
Yeah.
But it's really nice. You know?
You're like, it's a Twitter competitor.
Yes. But it's really nice because, like, it allows you to run Windows XP inside of Windows 7.
Right.
So you could still, like, you know, test stuff. And, like, if you have a program that's not compatible with Windows 7, which there's hardly anyone around, right? But if there's one, you can run it, and you can put it actually in all programs, I think. If you put it in there, it will show up in your external Windows 7 start menu.
Mm-hmm.
And then you click there, and it will start the XP mode without showing all the Windows
Chrome.
XP stuff, yeah, the
right.
Chrome. And it shows only program, and you see, it doesn't have the Windows 7 skin, right? Because it's a Windows XP program, but it's still you only have the program, which is kind of nice. You can move
it's
it around
awesome.
And copy and paste, and we'll take that. And
it's everything. Awesome. And there's a lot of things just in terms of, like, mitigation factors and things developers should do to upgrade their apps to work with Windows 7. But XP mode's, like, the great backup if you have, you know, an app that's been abandoned, for example, that you still want to use, and for whatever reason it doesn't work on 7.
Mm-hmm.
But that and Virtual PC are now available as subscriber downloads. So
that's cool.
For people to start playing.
Oh.
I know.
That's like, is Channel 9 now PDC?
Kind of, sort of. The way Jeff describes Channel 9 was Channel 9 is PDC every day.
That's kind of true.
Yeah. So now these are Jamie's T-shirt designs.
Our Jamie from the coffee house.
Jamie from the coffee house. So I love this design because it does the perfect, you know, C9. It's got the fun future of developer technology. But
I like how he like did the integration with like the 9 guy. You know, kind of the antennas and still like it's PDC, but still is the 9. You know.
Yeah.
Where does it end? Where does it stop? You know, merging.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Here. And these are going to be made into T-shirts.
Sweet.
I know, and given out for PDC. Now, are you going to the PDC? Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Well, I will be there.
Yeah, of course.
And we'll have some T-shirts, and I still think they have $300 discounts. So if you're looking to go, and kudos to Jamie for this. My one thing, and we were discussing this before, is Jamie needs to design a T-shirt a month and sell a subscription. You get T-shirt of the month, and it's Jamie's T-shirt subscriptions. I'll pay him in advance, and we'll wear them on the show.
Imagine. That would be nice. You sign up with Jamie's T-shirts.
We're too busy to find cool T-shirts,
yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
You know,
well,
we talked about, you have no free time. Welcome
nobody
to Microsoft.
Has free time, right?
Yeah.
So we need Jamie's T-shirts.
Make us look good.
Jamie's Canadian, like, T-shirts.
Yeah.
He's from Canada, right?
He can build his own brand.
His empire,
for, like,
right? Then.
For, like, geek T-shirts.
Yeah, that would be
geek
awesome.
Chic. Yeah, something. Anyways, there's our stupid business model.
So what's this?
This is nHibernate, which is a competitor to the ORM you've personally built, right? This is Allende, who, and I hope I'm saying that right, who actually built nHibernate, goes through the three ways to actually build and to take a step back, nHibernate is a way to map, you know, your objects in BBC Sharp to database data.
Mm-hmm.
So you tables.
You bridge the gap kind of between relational and object oriented.
Right. It's an ORM. I'm sure people are familiar with ORM technologies, but that's basically what nHibernate does. And it does a lot more such that you can, you know, if you start off with versus just taking the database and mapping, it's the plain old C# objects. Just give me a set of classes and then build the database map to that.
Other way around too?
It can do both ways.
Oh, that's
right?
Sweet.
Yeah, exactly. So like, wow, you know, it turns out we're not going to be serializing this on disk anymore. We need this to be in a database.
On floppy disk, right?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, you serialize an XML file,
what
right?
You do,
I love that you think I'm so old school. That's great. But he goes through the one method is to just build it in line, like I'm building that. Another is to use an XML mapping file, and that's basically, you know, this field maps to this field. Another one is using Fluent nHibernate,
mm-hmm.
which is a C# class that allows you to basically do write code to do the mapping. And some things it can do auto mapping, and there's a lot of nice features in there, and he walks through
that. I guess like it does the auto mapping if you like have the same type, and like it will like look for a property that maps to like the columns, stuff like that in the table or something.
Exactly
right.
Right. So it's like customer first name, last name. You have a class, first name, last name. You know, it's sort of implicit, if you will, unless you want it to be F name in the database or something. Yeah. Then you have to worry about it. So it makes a lot of work for people that aren't familiar or don't really want to work with XML mapping to be able to write code to do that mapping.
Which is kind of nice, right?
Yeah. And you get, you know, I can verify the code. Somebody else is used to using code versus XML. So, but anyways, he goes through the three different ways and, you know, kind of when to use which.
Nice.
Yeah. I used to be the C# product manager. You used to be a C# MVP. And I think you said MVPs are more important.
That isn't... Well.
Do you want to do the luxury of going through this and I'll throw in color commentary here?
That we should do.
Okay.
I think that this blog post is all about like the difference between like the hard cast, right, brackets?
Yes.
And the S statement, which the S statement, what it does is like give it an instance of an object, you say S a certain type, and it will check if that instance is actually possible to convert to that type, and if it's not possible, it will return you null, the default value for reference types, I guess.
Right.
And the cool thing here is like, S, you should usually always use when you don't know exactly what type you're dealing with. So
right.
You understand, well, I could try to cast. If it's possible, it will work. If not, it gives me a null, and I could like check that for being null or not.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like using the hard cast, where it will actually throw an exception. And we don't want to throw exceptions in .NET, right? Because the exceptions are only for like really stuff that like errors, right? That are predictable or something like that.
It's a runtime error because it can't do...
But we want to like avoid these kind of things. We want like checks first, right, I think.
Yeah, so use your parens when you know explicitly know this thing is going to go to this thing.
Yeah.
And you know, if it doesn't, there's going to be a runtime error. I'm not going to be able to catch it now. And as is, you know, I'm not sure, rather than doing the if type of blah, 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 it's just say as.
Which is like even if you do like, I mean, the second or like the third, and parent would be like, if I don't know exactly what type it is, right, I could say like, if variable name is that type, then I do the hard cast, and otherwise I do like nothing or whatever whatever I need to do. And that means that you do twice the cast, right? First it's like the is, which will check, oh, is it that type? Can I convert it into that type?
Mm-hmm.
And then it will do the cast again, where you do like the hard cast, right?
Right.
So in that scenario, it's way better to use the S because it will do one cast, so you save some cycles, right? Cycles.
And in some cases, I've seen this actually be more of a developer preference,
mm-hmm.
where some people prefer as you were saying, for readability or more like Visual Basic style.
Yeah.
I tend to be more the parentheses style. Yeah.
It's more like the C style or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I you know, it is what it is, but it's just kind of like, you know, for some people it's more personal preference, but, you know, there are reasons both exist.
Yeah.
So.
They're both great.
So this is something that I wish I had, you know, probably a year ago when I was writing the Coding for Fun book, but it's a peer-to-peer video series that goes through how to build P2P applications. So this first one's on peer name resolution protocol. It's a protocol where, unlike, if you think about, like, what the way you communicate with a browser, with the web, it uses this thing in the sky called a DNS to basically do the mapping.
Mm-hmm.
PNRP basically does it, except there's it's dynamic, right? So in real time, clients are going to be able to connect, and how do I resolve their names using IPv6?
Oh, it uses IPv6, right?
Yeah, for like sort of uniqueness for the users. And a number of things for how that actually works and how you can build an ad hoc network with multiple clients, how it passes through. PNRP and the peer-to-peer stack does all that work for you. So if you're interested in learning how to build peer-to-peer applications, check this out. It's a 5-part series. For the Coding for Fun app, it was PeerCast, which was, I want to be able to watch videos that are on my home PC that I'm running this app on and be able to watch them anywhere in the world,
mm-hmm.
you know, anytime I want, through firewalls, through whatever, my recorded videos on Windows Media Center.
Yeah, kind of.
And
nice.
How much would you pay for this? Zero! but it was a real pain to have to go through the actual stuff.
It's kind of cool that stuff like that is on Channel 9.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Nice to learn stuff on Channel 9, right?
Yeah, yeah. So this is an interesting post on how to build your own editor in 10 minutes. Now, this is... The reason you can do this is because it's the Sharp Develop source code that they factored into a WPF control called Avalon Edit. So Avalon Edit allows you to say, hey, I'm going to have text files and I'm going to have, you know, tabbed text files, and I want to set the content type, basically, that it's going to be C#.
The profile kind of, right?
Yeah, exactly. PHP, and I'm trying to think Visual Basic, and they have a handful of other ones that they can do. Automatic syntax colorization happens. So if you want to build your own, you know, editor.
For your World of Warcraft language.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they don't have Lua, right? So then
but
I have to build.
But you could create a profile.
Well, we have add-on studio for World of Warcraft.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
But, like, if you wanted something that's, like, control.
You're trying to build a competitor to me. That's fine. No, that's fine. Whatever.
It's nice.
I'm building Dan SQL Azure, too. It's going to run on MySQL. It's going to be awesome.
On your private cloud at home?
Yes, and it's going to be peer-to-peer based. Yeah. It's going to be awesome. So, anyways.
Well, it's kind of nice, you know, all the highlighting and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work if you need to do it on your own.
Well, I mean, you can imagine, like, Windows Live Writer, for example, does colorization for edits. Like, it'd be awesome for it to just pick up this control and boom, it has it, right?
Yeah.
So, we're counting how many times we say the word boom and.
Boom.
Boom! Next slide.
So, this one is really interesting. It's like .NET 4 FAQ Part mm-hmm. 1. And it gives you everything about the DLR, right? Like, what is new there? What is new? What's coming with the dynamic language runtime in .NET 4? Gives you, like, the most frequently asked questions with, like, some answers. And this is, like, a living document that's, like, maintained by the authors on Code Project.
Yeah.
So that they actually add more stuff, I mean, the more, like, they know about it, right? And they will also change stuff, like, how it will change and whatever, right? So that's, like, a living document where you can always find the newest and greatest information about .NET 4, right?
Yeah, and this is just the first part, which is just mm-hmm. the dynamic language runtime. And they go through, last week we covered the Expando object, which allows you to do sort of dynamic types. Like, you know, I'm going to be doing stuff at runtime. I don't know what my data type is. I can then do it, and I can actually do link queries even on a dynamic type that I'm deciding
sweet.
What the fields are. Yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah, it's very cool. So.
So what's that?
This is probably just a simple video. You know, ASP.NET MVC is, you know, I'd say a relatively new technology for building web apps. The point is you can now, this video shows how you can use ASP.NET MVC in Windows Azure. So if you're building a web application, you don't need to use just ASP.NET Web Forms. You can actually use MVC, and this shows you how to set your application up to use it in Azure.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. What I find is, like, I used Windows Azure a few times,
mm-hmm.
and checked it out just for fun, right? And it's interesting how much stuff runs there.
Yeah.
Like, I could, like, include random assemblies into my project or solution and mm-hmm. web role or worker role, right? Mm-hmm. And then upload them and run them and would just work, right? I was, like, really impressed. And even native code runs there. So it's like you could include a native DLL and it would just upload and work there. Worker role, which is like, worker role is like a service or something. Yeah. It has no UI.
Yeah.
On the web role is like
it's like a
website,
background
right?
service in yeah. the cloud.
Yeah, which is kind of nice, right? Sometimes you need stuff like that.
Pull all Twitter users for this day that exactly. are searching for, you know, and Little Guru.
And show them on, and then you have a web role where you show the data, right? There's like
absolutely.
One role that puts them into SQL Azure. And another than the web role who would actually bring it out from there, right? I mean, load sure. it from there and show it to the users, right? It's kind of
yeah.
nice.
Yeah, so it's the best way to scale out, you know, when you need to do a denial of service attack. You just build a bunch of worker roles.
That's okay. It's awesome.
So picks of the week.
Picks of the weeks, yeah. Or week, sorry.
Yeah.
So my pick of the week is the new Sony X-Series. I love this notebook.
This looks hot.
It is so hot. The thing is, if you look at the picture and you see how that's like the VGA port, right? They had to cut like the in the thing to actually get it in, right?
Because it's that thin.
It's that thin, right? It weighs nothing.
Wow. 1.5 pounds?
It's like half an inch height, right?
Half an inch high. That's ridiculous.
And it's 11 inch, like the size of the screen.
Yeah.
And it has like how many hours of battery?
So it comes with two batteries. Yeah. One is kind of tremendous, but it does give you 12-hour standard, 14 extended, and yeah. not including the regular battery. This is the regular battery that they're showing, and that's 3 hours.
3 hours, which is kind of good too, right? I mean,
yeah, but I mean, like, I wouldn't be afraid if they gained like another half pound and you get 12 hours of battery.
But imagine, like, I mean, this guy, I mean, there's no CD drive in there, probably.
Right, right.
But it has a solid state disk, right? Which is
yes, which
awesome.
Is a yeah, exactly. Screaming fast, 2 gigs. This is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I want one.
I want one too.
Yes.
It's awesome.
So my pick of the week is maybe related. So this is a...
oh yeah, well, they ran Windows 7 on that guy, right?
Exactly right. So this is a Family Guy episode, and yes, you can make your... how they sold out. Brian basically teasing Stewie, and the reason I love this is... since Brian is my normal co-host, I normally do my Stewie voice with him. In fact, he changes ringtone to be Stewie calling him. So it says, Brian! And that's his ringtone. So there's something very personal about this one. But this should be fun. There's a bunch of videos going on to meet with the lineup with the Windows 7 launch, which I guess is next week at 10:22. Mm-hmm. So it should be. I'm looking forward to the Family Guy stuff because I love Family Guy and Windows 7.
I wonder if that notebook is an X series.
It's too thick, clearly.
Yeah. Guess so.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you for being
here. Thanks for having me.
And we'll catch you next week.